Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulips in Tuscany podcast. We're your hosts, Steffi,
Paige,
and Sarah.
And we're on a mission to share your stories and provide some awesome resources for families touring Holland.
We are three moms to some pretty incredible kiddos, and we're excited that you're here to navigate this unexpected journey with us through beautiful Holland.
Hey guys, thank you for tuning in tonight. We're glad to have you back with us. Tonight, we are going to be chit-chatting with someone very near and dear to my heart. Drum roll, please. My mom, Sabra.
Hello.
Hi, Sabra. Hi.
You are just the cutest, and you were like Paige's twin.
That's what I said. She is Paige's twin.
It's not a bad thing to look like her because she's smoking hot.
You got some good genes.
Thank you. To start off, let's chat about IEPs and the school system beyond the early years. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
I don't know about you guys, but Joshua is a pretty picky eater. He has quite a few sensory issues with certain foods, which makes it sometimes difficult to get him all the fiber he needs to maintain a healthy gut. Lately, we've been trying out High Fiber for Kids, which is a clear liquid fiber that can easily be added to your kid's favorite drink. Joshua doesn't even notice it's in there. We love it because it has 6 grams of fiber in 1 liquid tablespoon. There's no mixing required like your other typical bulking fibers, and it has a FOS prebiotic to help feed the healthy bacterias that are already in the gut, which ultimately promotes more regular bowels. The best part is that it's not a laxative or a stimulant, so your child will never become dependent on it. It's free from PEGs, which can be found in fibers like Miralax. So I highly recommend you try out High Fiber for Kids. They're available on Amazon, and you can check them out by visiting the link in our podcast notes.
Mom, before we get started into the bulk of the conversation, can you tell us a little bit about your personal connection to Down syndrome and how that has impacted you professionally?
Sure. So the August after Paige found out that she was pregnant, I had a new class of student. And for the very first time, I had a student who had Down syndrome, which I had no knowledge of how to teach or communicate or anything with this student. And because of him, he was not very verbal. He had some vision problem. His intellectual ability was low, and I had to do a lot of research finding out all about Down syndrome, how to communicate with him, how to help him through the process socially and academically as well. And as a result, he opened my eyes to this whole new world of students and kids out there that I've made connections with. And from that point, after we found out that Tristan had Down syndrome when he was born, actually, in January, after that point, every time I sit in an IEP meeting or I start writing one for one of my students, I always think about my grandson, and I feel that I have to put more heart and soul into writing my IEPs because now I had a purpose, not just a job, but now I had a purpose, a vocation for working with these special need kids. So this particular student really opened up my eyes and opened up my heart to my job more so than any other experience I've ever had.
And that paired really just so incredibly with the timing of my pregnancy with Tristan that it was just divine timing.
Yes, it certainly was because, you know, you were pregnant a few months before August rolled around and we had no idea what we were getting into. Everything seemed to be fine almost until a month or so before Tristan was born. So that was not even on the radar of anything that, you know, we could have prepared ourselves for. But I really think that this particular student was really divine intervention in my life and in my career.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I have been at Seminole High School in Florida for about 10 years. Prior to that, I worked with special education for a year in Illinois. And prior to that, I worked with elementary age kids in Trinidad and the Caribbean. So I have a wide background working with kids from all levels, but I think I really like working with the teenagers in high school. and helping them transition from that period of their life into adulthood.
I love that. What makes you love high school so much?
I think I can relate to them better, and I understand their struggles. And for some reason, I have a really good connection with most of them in my high school.
Awesome. I bet you're their favorite.
Sometimes. when I push them, they don't like it, because even though they have disabilities, I always believe you raise the bar for them and they will rise up to the occasion.
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe that as well. Okay, I have a question for you. What would you say would be some of the biggest challenges that come to mind for a high schooler with special needs?
So the students I encounter, students generally are teenagers in high school that want to fit in with the typical kids, and they don't want to show that they have a disability. And in fitting in with the kids in the classroom, it's a whole other story, because they want to be so normal, and normal could be anything, that they don't want to seek help in the classroom. I facilitate with other teachers in science, English, and I rotate around classroom and ask, I can see them struggling, and I say, do you need help? No, I don't need your help. They refuse help because they're embarrassed. And I think that's one of their biggest struggle, is to be able to advocate for themselves and know that their disability is not a handicap. I like to say it's their uniqueness or their awesomeness, you know, rather than saying a disability. Each one of us are unique. I myself are unique. I have my own little handicap, but that doesn't make me any less than anybody else. So, and another thing is, they don't like to advocate for their needs from their teachers. They, you know, it's something that they feel embarrassed about. And I see that struggle over and over with my students in the last 10 years.
Wow. What would you say would be some of the most helpful supports for a high school child?
So supports, we can start with parent being advocate for their child. That's one of the biggest thing, being an advocate for their child. Attending meetings. I have many parents who do not show up to their kids' meeting, or they would just give permission and say, go ahead. And I'm very diligent about contacting parents prior to the meeting, either email, phone call. I ask, do you have concerns? Can I address it? What can I do to help your child be successful in high school? So that by the time we get to the meeting, even if they don't show up, I have all their input, as well as I interview the student, pre-plan with them, go through their old IEP and ask them, what is working for you? We will keep it. And what is not working for you, tell me so I can include something else, some other accommodation to help them be successful in high school. So parents could be their advocate for their child. We need to teach children of all ages, as young as possible, take them to these meetings and let them understand that this is about them to be successful. And I think with that change coming through all the way to high school, they can advocate for themselves in the classroom with their teachers, and they should feel free to come up. I am their case manager. I have 50 kids who are assigned to me, and I have students would email me and say, actually today I had one email me bright and early and said, I need to see you today. I said, well, can it wait for the last period of the day? She said, no, I need to see you now if you're free. I said, okay. So I drop whatever I need to, you know, to see the student. And this is what I like to see more students do. Even though it wasn't really an emergency, you know, I drop it.
They advocated for themselves.
Exactly. And I wish more students have that confidence to email their teachers, or, you know, I tell them, if I'm not there in my classroom, just slip a note under the door, you know? So the support, parents should support their kids. The kids should be able to advocate in high school. That's one of the important things we try to teach them. In high school, there is not much handheld, you know, especially if these kids are not intellectually disabled as much. The supports are there for them. Also, kids who are more cognitively disabled, they have other supports like a paraprofessional who can be in the classroom for them to also assist them every day. So those are some of the supports I think that would be helpful for them.
So we talked a little bit about parents. So what would you say would be, if you could talk to all your parents, I know you mentioned you don't always get to communicate with them as much as you like, but if you could talk to your parents, what would be some of your suggestions for them to be doing with their kids at home to help prep them to be more successful at school?
So I think with our ESC students, having schedule and structure and a learning environment is really, really important for our students. And I see a lot of students struggling, even if it's students who are really academically strong, they are still struggling with organization and being organized, having a schedule and some sort of structure, having visual displays at home. And it doesn't matter, again, how academically strong they are, they still struggle with that. So I would encourage parents to at home to create that learning environment and create a time and space for that child. And in high school, there's a lot of time that they need to spend, aside from homework, to review constantly, to review material as well.
So the engagement shouldn't stop at home.
No, definitely not at home.
Can you give us a rundown of what transitioning out of the school system looks like?
So when a student turns 14 years old, that is when we start planning for post-secondary goals. So at 14 years, we have part of the IEP, which we call the transition portion of the IEP. It's not separate from an IEP, it's in addition to an IEP. So at this point, when they turn 14 years, we do a pre-plan with them where we look at what are their hobbies, what they like, what would they like to do post-secondary, would they like to go to college, would they prefer to learn a trade, or would they have a student who said she would love to be a cosmetologist, so you don't really need to go college. So based on their needs, their goals for their future, we start selecting goals to accommodate that. We select courses that would, help them along that path. So transition IEP starts at 14. We have goals, we have accommodations as well as to help them through that process.
What would some of those accommodations look like?
Okay, so let's see. So transitioning from high school, we can start looking at, for instance, if a child wants, I say, attend college, we would start looking at what area in college you want, look at, research the colleges, see what the admission, because they have no clue. The minimum GPA is a 2.0 to graduate here in Florida. However, a lot of colleges, especially if it's academically strong student who want to pursue maybe something in the medical field, a 2.0 will not even get them into a nursing program. Mm-hmm. They need a minimum of 2.5. So we start prepping them and having them research the colleges, the admission requirements, and we put that like on their annual or yearly IEP as goals. So by the next year, when we have to pre-plan, they can present that or have that awareness, and we can just keep moving the goal closer and closer to their transitioning out of high school. So for some students who are not as strong and may just want to probably attend the military, then we let them research what are the requirements, what are the minimums. Some students may say, I want to go to the Marines or to the Navy, and they have to take certain tests. We have them research those tests, what scores for different branch of the military as well. Or maybe if they want to get a certificate as a barber or hairdresser, we ask them to research those requirements. So all that we start including from 14 years all the way till their senior year. By senior year, they should have their admission requirements, their everything ready to just transition to post-secondary.
Okay. So do most of your teens that you have end up graduating on time, or is that also an accommodation?
For ESC student in the state of Florida, they have until the age of 22 to graduate.
Okay.
So
okay.
Typically 18 years, you know, between 17, 18, maybe 19 is a typical age based on the time of the year they start school. However, they have until 22 years to graduate from high school. That is something we don't really tell them a lot, because then they start slacking off and, you know, we push for them to graduate.
They got plenty of time.
Yeah, they take their sweet time.
Yeah.
You want them to graduate with their peer cohort.
Yeah, so yeah. If they start, you know, they have that four-year cohort to graduate with. We always encourage them to, you know, graduate with their cohort. And we offer, if they fail classes in our school, we have a Plato lab. It's a lab that they can go to recover the credits or GPA. And we also offer summer school so that they can graduate within the 4 years with their cohort. However, you know, some of them go beyond the typical 4 years, but not many.
Is that the same for all 50 states? Or
I was just going to ask that.
I think it is based on state to state.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. As we brought that up, one of the things I think parents should be very familiar with is the procedural safeguards. The IDEA was enacted in 1974 to protect our students with disabilities. And there is a packet called the procedural safeguards that tells you all your rights for your child, you know, how do you protect your child? What are the rights? That should be every parent's Bible. If a child is, you have a child with a disability, you should have that. That should be offered actually at every IEP meeting. And, you know, every parent should read that and know what is in that packet. So I think I lost my question there.
That's good info.
So that packet has all the information. Again, based on each state, the requirements are slightly different. So I know here's until 22 years they can graduate.
Okay, so I just pulled up a list really quickly while we were talking, and it looks like most states will let a student stay up until the age of 19. Mm-hmm. And I would say about 75% of the states will let them stay over the age of 20.
Interesting.
So they'll have plenty of time to graduate, but yeah. It's always good to raise the bar.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have a question for you, Sabra. So if, trying to think how to word this best. So once you start that transition process, say you mentioned you had a student who wanted to do cosmetology. So say she wants to do cosmetology. You mentioned that you set goals for her in that area and you get some classes for her that could help her with that skill set. Is there anything that you guys do to actually get her out in the field, almost like a internship training or something like that? Yeah, to really actually help them prep.
So in the county I am in, Seminole County, our high schools have different programs to facilitate exactly that. So it's after school, however, that you can go and do cosmetology. We have engineering, we have avionics, and you can actually get credit for it. You can get the practice you need. You can actually leave high school with a certificate as a cosmetologist.
Okay, so it's like trade school.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, exactly.
I did something like that actually in high school myself.
Yep. So that's for kids who are typically academically strong and they can, you know, go ahead and do that after school program. For our more cognitively challenged student, intellectually challenged student, we also have what is called a JET program, on the job training program. They have to be, I believe it's 11 or 12 grades that between that time frame, and we take them to different, say for instance, a hotel and that hotel industry, and we can take them to learn to be a housekeeper. They actually go and make up beds and do all the training there on the job. Or perhaps if they want to be a stock person in Walgreens, we make, we have Walgreens nearby. We take them there, and they're all in their cute little uniforms and feel very official there. And with these kids who are more intellectually disabled, I look at them like they would put labels on packages, like price tags, and it's like an assembly line in the classroom. We actually have them practice and then prep them and take them out into the field.
Oh, cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So we have that. I mean, there is a lot of programs out there. And talking about programs, the Voc Rehab or Vocational Rehab, that's an agency that students can, we encourage them to sign up with that in 11th or 12th grade so that when they transition out of high school, they can get so much help from them. From financial help, they can get help with finding jobs or going to college or even have an attorney to help them with different matters.
Do you find that a lot of the kids that have academic challenges feel a sense of dignity when they do the jobs that their peers necessarily aren't doing? Do they feel like a sense of pride in being the stock person and wearing the vest and the Walgreens vest and doing things like that?
Yeah, I look at them and in their normal clothes in this campus, they're just like any other student. But I noted, that's a very good point that you brought up, Paige, that once they put on their uniform, their special shirt and pants, and they have their shoes, there's such a sense of pride in them, the way they walk and they hang together. You can see like they have a purpose,
like their whole demeanor probably changes.
Everything changes with them. Appearance, everything.
I love that. Okay, so we don't want to keep you for too long. We had a couple of questions come in on our question stickers, so we are going to jump into our Q&A segment.
First question, what are some good IEP goals, or what should a good IEP goal sound like?
So a goal should be SMART. It should be specific. It should be measurable. It must have some action to it. So for instance, let's pick a name, Paige. We can say, Paige, I'm going to do a goal for you, a math goal. So I should have a goal something like, Paige should be able to solve equations with 100% accuracy in 2 out of 3 data collections. So that's a goal for the entire school year. So it tells me what is she trying to achieve? How long is she going to take to do that? And when I pull how many data, how many times must she be able to produce that result? So we have goals for math, we have goals for science, social studies. We also have social personal skills goals for kids who struggle with emotions. We have goals for that as well. And we have smaller objectives that they can achieve within the year for that goal.
Goodness, I think everybody needs goals.
Yes.
We all need them.
Absolutely. Okay, our second question is, how can we push for inclusion to be added to an IEP?
So on IEPs, our first thing in creating an IEP for a student is full inclusion. So high school, we have my school, we have 2,040 minutes for the week. We want every EAC student to be in that Gen Ed population. And if they are there, they're going to have accommodation. They may have a support facilitator who comes in a couple times a week to assist the teacher, well, not the teacher really, but to assist the student in the classroom. Then we, if that doesn't really work and the student is still struggling, then we move them to less inclusion, which would be probably a direct instruction class where they sit with their peers and they are taught by an ESE teacher, which I had last 8 years or so, I always taught biology, direct instruction. Again, the thing with those classes is that the students still have to hit all the standard academic scores, the curriculum, everything in those classes. The only thing is you chunk the lesson, you do more visuals with them. So that is the least inclusive environment. And that is kind of like a last resort when they can't function in the general education classes with support. Okay. So the full inclusion should always be our first aim with our students, always.
So how can they push for that?
So if you have a child, you always ask for them to be in general education, full inclusion with support. And in high school, our supports would be some students are on different diploma, which we call access point, which is the more intellectually challenged student. They can have a one-on-one, meaning one person could be assigned to this child throughout the day, every day for the entire year. That is one of the supports. To tear it back down, we can have support facilitator coming into the general education class for your child. So that's another accommodation we can provide. We can also have accommodations for the child in the classroom, like testing accommodation, completing assignments, giving them extended time, preferential seating. Maybe your child will do better sitting closer up front to see or to hear, depending on their disability, or maybe they're distracted, so that they have a preferential seating. There are all kinds of classroom accommodations we can have to help them with full inclusion. For testing, for classroom, for assignments, everything.
Wow, this is all so good to know.
Yep.
No, I like hearing kind of the high school perspective, because I feel like so often we hear kind of the younger kids and the kids who are just starting school, and you don't hear as much about that transition process or prepping them for the real world, you know? So I really appreciate all of your knowledge on that.
In high school, though, we really want students to be self-advocate and to get all the accommodations they need. And they should not ever be afraid to ask for it. I know sometimes it could be intimidating for our high school students to approach their teachers. And that's why they have a case manager, if in case, you know, some teachers might be a little difficult and may see it as a special privilege. And really, it's not. All we're trying to do is level this playing field for this child with a disability so that they can function just as good as any typical student.
I love that.
I have a question for you, and you may or may not know the answer. So for your students who choose to go to college, mm-hmm. are there programs in colleges for students with special needs where they can get some sort of accommodations and things like that for support?
Absolutely. So I know for the state of Florida, there's a disabilities office where the student can take their IEP to that office, give them a copy. And of course, well, I would say to my students, please make an extra copy, keep it in your backpack. So the first day you have your professor, you give them and let them know what your accommodations are. However, not all colleges accept the, if it's a private college, they don't have to accept the IEP and the accommodations is up. It's left to the, you know, individual colleges. So that's one other thing. The other thing is, so the Disabilities Act, again, mostly public universities probably would accept it. Private colleges, we're not sure. Certain colleges do have programs where kids can have like an honorary degree just for the college experience, but not really with a degree as such, you know. But there are all kinds of different programs to assist our students.
I know UCF right here in Orlando has a program where they do get a degree, but it is not going to be, let's say, I'm not good at math. So if I was in one of these programs, I would not be a mechanical.
That's why you have a goal page.
I know, that's why she said that. That was an inside joke. That's why she said that. I am not a math person. But let's just say if I had to do one of those programs, it would be more of a general type of degree and diploma that they would get from the high school. And I know it's right now it's just a 2-year program and that's changing. And I know George Mason University, actually one of our older friends, she's going there right now and she actually lives independently on campus.
Oh, that's awesome. So I know there's like scholarship programs and stuff out there as well. Like Ruby's Rainbow does scholarships for people with Down syndrome, which is really cool. So yeah, I was just curious what kind of accommodations there are once you are able to get into college.
Mm-hmm. So it all depends again on the college, you know, if they accept the disability and with the not the disability, but the accommodation to go
right.
with the student's IEP. It's great. You just take it in. And again, not, it has to be dependent on the type of college and, you know, gotcha. What the disability, what the accommodations are.
This was so insightful because I feel like I worry so much about the future. I mean, my son's only going to be going into kindergarten, yeah. but you know, it's just really scary thinking about them going into high school. And I didn't know any of this that you were telling us. So it was definitely very insightful.
So as you said, your son is in kindergarten. Have you signed up online with APD, Agency for Persons with Disabilities?
No.
There's that website that you can go and sign up. The waiting list, you start as soon as that child has an IEP, a diagnosis, and all of that good stuff.
Okay.
You go there, and sometimes it takes up to 15 years, 12, 13, 15 years to actually become a member. And that is important because we worry about our children.
And their future.
Mm-hmm. Adult, yes.
Yeah.
And they help so much as well.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great resource.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. Yeah, it's in Florida.
I was gonna, sorry.
But each state, I keep forgetting. Here,
I was going to say it sounds a lot like ours. Ours is called PUNS, and we are on the PUNS list.
Right.
And he's on a huge wait list, but they said to start it early.
Yes.
And I have to keep updating his medical information and adding each diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And eventually his number will be called, basically.
Yeah. I have never heard of this. And now I'm wondering if there's something in Arizona.
Yeah,
We
had to have a whole meeting with it, with a representative and show all of his medical documentation. And I have to make sure that I'm updating them every time he gets a new diagnosis. And
how would I find that in Arizona? Like what, cause yours is called something different. How did you even hear about it?
So I heard about ours through, when he was in early intervention, one of his, I think maybe it was his developmental therapist had mentioned it to me. And I was like, man, I would have never known to do that. So I was super happy that she had mentioned it to me. And I went and did it immediately. And they follow up with you every single year. I get the paper saying you'll be contacted by a representative. And it's kind of like the more medical, every diagnosis that we have to add for him, it like bumps him up on the list, basically. But it could still be 15 years before he ever gets any kind of aid.
Is this like DDD? Is that what it's like? Like at Arizona, we have DDD. And so Joshua qualified for that. We had to apply for it. And it's kind of like almost like an advocate person that I can go to for all my questions for everything.
So that's a good resource to start. This is for transitioning after high school.
Okay.
So, but that's a very good resource person. If your county, like your county education center or office, you can always call them and they can have some. I know for here in Florida, my county, we have what is called a transition fair once a year that we invite all the parents that they can come as long as they have a child in the county. It doesn't matter from kindergarten to high school, they can come. And there is so much information that parents can start signing up, registering for free. It's all free. And it's good resource. So maybe you can start there as well. But I believe every state will have something similar to assist our young adults post-secondary.
That's super helpful for people listening who didn't know about it. Because
we'll have to add this to the podcast notes too, some links and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sabo. We don't want to keep you too long. I can't believe how quickly the time went.
But, I know you're a trooper. It's late by you.
It is. But we so appreciate you. And that is all for tonight. Thank you guys so much for continuing to listen. We've been blown away by how many of you there are listening, especially every week. It blows my mind every time I see the numbers. Don't forget, there's plenty of ways that you can help support Tulips. You can subscribe and become an official patron and earn some awesome patron only perks such as merchandise. You can get early release for episodes, shout outs on our podcast calls, etc. You can rock our merchandise by heading to our shop, and you can simply help by spreading the word. Thank you guys so much. Have a good night.
Thanks guys.
You're welcome. Good night.